Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Pure Dog Talk is sponsored by Trupanion, medical insurance for pets. When your pet gets sick or injured, the last thing you want to think about is money. Trupanion can help remove some of that financial burden. Instead of waiting for a reimbursement check, Trupanion is able to pay veterinarians directly, taking the burden off of you to pay up front. If you're a breeder, Trupanion also has a free program that allows you to send your litters home with a special offer to try out medical insurance. Follow the link on my partner page to learn more about the breeder support program, and don't forget to mention Pure Dog Talk sent you. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves, and I have with us today a friend of mine, Ms. Leslie Hiltz, is a beagle breeder and a judge, and has a very exciting new project that she's working on, which is a website called beaglehistory.org. So, Leslie, welcome. I am excited for you to tell us all about it.
Thank you for having me, Laura. It's nice to be able to spread the word.
Yes, I think it's excellent. So, we're going to talk about beaglehistory.org, but before we can get to beaglehistory.org, we're going to do lesliehistory.org. So, give us a little 411. I mean, you are beagles forever and ever since I've known you, which is 20-some-odd years, so...
Well, I first started in beagles in the mid-60s in Australia. Mm-hmm. As most people do, we bought a beagle as a pet, but the person I bought it from encouraged me to show. And the only attribute this dog had was that he was a great show dog. He wasn't a particularly good specimen, but he did like to show. So I showed him, and he never titled, but he got me interested in showing, and I went to a lot of dog shows with various people because I was too young to drive at that point. Mm-hmm. And so having shown for about a year and a half, and realized that getting thirds and fourth place ribbons was really not much fun, I decided I needed a better beagle. So a local beagle breeder gave me on lease a better beagle. Mm. And I had fun with that and titled it. And then, as many young Australians do, when they've finished school and done some higher education, they go traveling the world. And so I returned my better beagle to the breeders and headed to England for a couple of years on a working holiday. Mm-hmm. And while I was in England, I, of course, bought two more beagles.
Right.
And showed them fairly successfully in England. I bought one beagle from Judith Ireland, who was Anna's Line Beagles, who became quite a foundation for beagles in Australia ultimately. And my other beagle was purchased from Thelma Gray, who was quite famous in England for corgis and chihuahuas, as well as beagles. At the end of 2 years, I went back to Australia, taking both dogs with me. And at that time, you couldn't fly dogs, so you had to go on a cargo ship.
Oh my goodness. Okay, now that is a cool piece of information I have not heard before.
Yes, it was not easy to import dogs into Australia because, of course, you had a 6-month quarantine
right
in Australia once they arrived. And so I was on a boat and I had bred my bitch and she was due to have puppies on the ship.
Oh my gosh.
And you were on a cargo ship, so there were only like 12 passengers, and had a very sympathetic captain. And we had quite a few dogs on board because that was the only way to get dogs from England to Australia. I think we had about 12 dogs on board. And the captain insisted that every one of the crew members took a dog into their cabin, because what they had done was they were shipped in a huge wooden outdoor kennel. Mm. And they were stashed on the deck with a chain, and that's where they were supposed to be for the duration. Well, the captain didn't like that idea, and so he made every crew member take a dog into his cabin.
So cool.
It was, except for the poor person that got an English foxhound who was a kennel dog.
Oh, my God.
Who wasn't house-trained and really didn't have any manners.
Mm.
I think that captain must not have liked that officer, but never mind. So anyway, my bitch reabsorbed her puppies, so she didn't have puppies.
Mm.
And then my dog turned out to be sterile.
Oh, jeez.
So that was not a great start to my imported beagles. The bitch did subsequently have puppies, so that was not an issue. But the dog I showed and finished, but then placed him as a pet because he was sterile.
Mm.
So that was that. So that was the beginning of my beagles. They both had American parents. So that was a sort of combination of American beagles who went to England and then I took them to Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Subsequently, some years later, I imported some page mill beagles from America to Australia.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, you had to send them from America to England. They had to do 6 months quarantine, then 6 months residency, and then 3 months quarantine in Australia.
So in other words, you're telling me as awful as it is to ship a dog to Australia anymore, it's better than it used to be?
Oh, yeah, it's a cinch.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, it's a cinch. So I had shipped a bitch from America to England, and I had bred her to a dog that Anna Catherine Nicholas owned.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was shipped to England. She woke puppies in English quarantine. Now, the puppies were allowed to leave quarantine once they were 3 months old.
Mm.
I was living back in Australia by then. So I had friends in England who took the three puppies and raised them until they were, I think they had to be 6 months old.
Mm.
And at that point, they could go to Australia. But if you sent them to New Zealand, they could do quarantine in somebody's house. They didn't have to go into quarantine kennels. So they went to friends in New Zealand, and they did a 6 month residency in New Zealand in a friend's home, or three separate friends' homes.
Right.
And then they could come into Australia without doing quarantine.
Oh, my gosh. What a process.
That was the puppies. Mm. But then the two adults did their 6 month residency in England and then flew to Australia.
Mm.
Because we had made great progress by now, you could fly them. However, the airline forgot to take them off the plane in Australia.
Oh, no.
And forward shipped them to New Zealand. Now, the only good thing was, had they gone anywhere else in the world, they would have been destroyed.
Right.
But because they went to New Zealand, they were allowed to turn around and come back.
Oh, my gosh.
The bitch was 6 weeks in whelp and in a crate for, 48 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. So importing dogs into Australia was not for the faint of heart.
No. Did the puppy survive? Did she survive? Did she? I mean, I'm sure messy, but...
She had two puppies, but having seen her in subsequent litters and knowing how big she was, I'm sure she lost some. But, of course, you were not allowed into quarantine to see them.
Right.
You were not allowed in quarantine to whelp them.
Mm.
They just had to arrive and look after themselves.
Oh, my gosh. Well, strong and hardy puppies, I guess. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
That was my start in beagles. Then in the late 80s, I met my husband, David, who was American and showed beagles and moved to America and got married. And I've been here ever since.
There you go.
There you go.
Well, and you guys mostly, if I remember correctly, have 15-inch beagles, correct?
Correct, except we just had a litter of puppies, and they're all 13-inch beagles.
Oh, no. Interesting. This is a whole subject that I just find fascinating. So in England, in Australia, do they divide the varieties as they do in the States, or they're just beagles?
America is the only country in the world that has two varieties.
Okay.
The rest of the world has beagles, and their standard says should not fall below 13 and should not exceed 16.
Okay, interesting.
So totally different.
Yes, absolutely. And my understanding and what you're saying is that you breed two 15-inch beagles, you whelp your puppies, and you can look at them and say, no, these are definitely not going to make 15 inches.
Yes and no, but you can guess, but your guess can be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But what most people don't realize is that you can show them, and you can start off showing a puppy as a 13.
Correct.
It gets too big, and you can go to a 15,
finish
and
it
you
as a
take
15.
Your points with you.
Yes. I have heard that, which I just think is the craziest thing in the world.
And then if it settles and goes back to 13, you can go back to 13.
Now that I had not heard.
Yeah.
And tell me the one that you told me this weekend, that at your national, every entry is wicketed as part of its exam. Is that accurate? Am I understanding correctly?
Yes. The national club asks the judge who judges the national to wicket every exhibit. And it's just done as part of the exam. We have fixed wickets, so you don't have to constantly keep measuring the wicket. We just measure it once in the morning, and you know, as long as a truck doesn't run over it, it doesn't change.
Don't throw it at anybody, I'm saying.
Wow. Yeah, we do that.
Okay.
So then I moved to America and married my husband. We lived in Michigan at that point, and we lived there for a few years, and then he decided he wanted to come back to Australia with me, and we moved back to Australia for 5 years, and we took some whippets with us because we now had a couple of whippets. Our first whippet was a Bobette whippet, and then we got two Sporting Fields whippets, and we took those back to Australia with us, and we changed the face of whippets in Australia. Because at that time, Australian whippets were all of the English style, which was smaller and curvier and much different. And then we took our two Sporting Fields ones back, and the breed sort of went a little change.
Yes, I would think that would change it a good bit. And so you came back to the Northwest at some point.
Right, yeah. So after we'd been in Australia for 5 years, my husband decided he really wanted to come back to the U.S., and so we did, and we sort of conducted a survey of where we wanted to live, and my criteria were no white stuff, no snow.
Yes.
I can deal with rain, but not the snow. And we sort of conducted a survey of airports, shows, and all those things, and we ended up in Vancouver, Washington.
Yeah.
So that's where we are.
And that's probably about the time I met you, is when you got back here.
Right. And we just have beagles now. We are down to 4 beagles. So
hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. Heads up, crew. Join our patrons today. Get immediate access to the support of a closed Facebook chat group, special patrons-only episodes, free mentoring sessions, and more. Just like the NPR of dogdom, Pure Dog Talk brings you the news, the knowledge, and the insight to succeed with your purebred dog. In exchange, our Pure Dog patrons share the love with monthly or annual gifts, and that helps defray the cost of overhead and sort of keeping the MP3s rolling, you know? Hit me up, laura@puredogtalk.com, and I'll hook you up with the details. So with all of this beagle history that you have personally, the idea of sort of preserving the history of your breed has a lot of personal meaning to you.
It sort of does. But I mean, you know, you often read that some icon of some breed has died, and you often wonder what happened to all their memorabilia, because as sure as eggs, the children weren't interested, or they had no children.
Right.
And it ends up in the landfill.
Right.
And this seems like a large waste. I had talked to Bo Bankston about it, and he was lamenting that fact too.
Bo and I just talked about it at Del Valle, so.
And so I was chatting to a good friend in Denmark, Toke Larsen, and he's a very young, keen beagler, just happens to be an IT expert. And he thought that we should try and digitize everything and put it up on the web in the cloud, so that everyone could access it for eternity, or until the cloud transforms into something else.
Something
which
else.
We don't know what it's going to be. And so that's what we've started to do. We had a little fundraiser at our national just to basically raise some money to support a website and a domain name.
Right.
We got incorporated in Denmark, and we decided to incorporate in Denmark because apparently it's the A, Toke lives there, and B, apparently it's very friendly to organizations being tax-free.
Ah, so okay.
That's why we did it. And so we had the little fundraiser to pay for storage, which currently is in the cloud. It may have to go somewhere else, but currently it's sitting in the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're starting to try and scan information in slowly, and we're looking for volunteers to assist, and we've got a few all over the world.
And so you're able to scan books, right? You were saying.
Yeah, some out-of-print books. I mean, obviously, you've got copyright issues. Mm-hmm. There are things, but there's an awful lot of magazines, breed magazines, mm-hmm. that somebody published that's gone out of business, that's not around, you know, which has a whole lot of information that lots of people would be interested in.
Right.
So we're not quite so interested in pedigrees because there are lots of pedigree databases out there.
Right.
But more along the line of pictures and stories and mm-hmm. histories and that sort of thing.
I just think it's amazing because, you know, I look at just my tiny little library and I look at some of my friends who have ridiculous libraries. And I think there is so much knowledge and, you know, I can only put so much on a podcast, right? I mean, but being able to see those dogs that are in the history of these pedigrees and really being able to read what people thought, and beagles particularly, such an old breed, being able to bring some of that stuff forward, I think is hugely important.
Yeah, and if you go and look at the few things we have got up so far, we've got some stories of old dogs from the past.
Mm-hmm.
And I put one up last week and several beagle people came back and said, wow, that was like 2 miles down the road from where I live now.
Oh, wow. Well, and are you able to include not just photos of dogs, but photos of, say, artwork, you know, historic depictions, some
yeah.
of those kind of things?
Well, I guess we have to obviously look at issues for some stuff.
Right. Legal stuff. I get that.
Yeah, legal stuff. Yeah. And we can also upload videos and all that sort of thing. I have to get it uploaded, but I have they were Super 8 movies of Page Mill beagles done in the 60s. We're going to try and upload those to a website.
And like hunting, I mean, it would be cool to watch hunting videos and stuff.
No,
not so much.
This is not so much. This is for show beagles.
Okay.
They're like two different worlds.
Yes, so yes.
We'll do the show beagles. Somebody else can do the hunting beagles.
Okay.
But yeah, so it has the option, and this is open source storage and ability mm-hmm. to manipulate the website. Mm-hmm. So a lot of research went into choosing this particular platform on which to do it.
Right. And you said Tokay really has that, and you're just so blessed, right, to have that skill.
Yeah. And what we'd ultimately like, and I mean, you know, this is a pipe dream, is that there be one website, like the history of the dog or something, and then all the other breed clubs would link into this. So you go to one site and then you can click on all the different websites for the various breeds. It would be nice if some kennel club somewhere in the world would host the basic
hint, website.
And it would just literally be a referral site
right.
that the others would then link into. But that's probably a pipe dream that will never happen.
Well, I think that if you can dream it, you can build it, right? So
right.
I think it's fabulous. And you guys have started this beaglehistory.org, and we'll make sure there's a link in the blog post for the podcast. But as we were talking about this, you and I on social media, when you tagged me in this post, we saw Borzoi. What was the other one? There was one other one that came up. There was a Borzoi history one, and there was another one.
I think it was an Afghan
maybe,
one, I think.
Yeah.
But, you know, we can link to those off
right.
our site. And, you know, that's something we can do, and perhaps they can reciprocate
right, right.
for us.
That's easy.
But it would still be nice if there was one base one, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love the idea of building this. And I think about all of the books, all of the photos, and I mean, it's not even necessarily every single dog that I had that finished, right? Like, nobody really cares about that little Miss Mark bitch that, you know, died before she was 3 in a car wreck. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But
yeah.
The important dogs that are carried forward in the breeding program, I think, are important.
Right. And there are sorts of dogs that you've heard of way back in pedigrees, and you think, well, I wonder what it looked like. And, I mean, who knows what it really looked like, because a lot of the pictures were photoshopped or the equivalent thereof.
Right.
But, you know, at least you can get an idea of what it looked like.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think for you guys to see things like markings, and some of it for us to see markings, and did it have tons of spots? And where did that one weird spot that is always in the middle of the blaze, where did that come from? You know, I just think those things
right.
are cool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, some of those things you can see.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just think some of the stories
right.
about some of the famous dogs, as I said, there's a couple on there now, and you read them, and it's really interesting to read what people wrote at the time
mm-hmm.
about those dogs.
Right. Well, I'm just happy to preserve the history of hearing about traveling from England to Australia with beagles in whelp. I'm just on a ship. I'm telling you, I think that is like the most amazing thing I've heard.
Well, there you go, you see.
I love it.
You didn't know what you were going to find.
But see, that's the great thing about the podcast. And anytime we do these sorts of things, beaglehistory.org or Pure Dog Talk. Anytime you reach out and educate and reach out and share information and share stories, it makes the entire sport better because we all learn something.
Right. And now you think all that stupid paperwork you have to do to get them to Australia is nothing.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Oh, my gosh. Okay. Well, Leslie, thank you so very much. I will have all kinds of Beagle History clickable links for folks in the podcast, and I really appreciate your time.
Thank you for inviting me, Laura.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.